You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. When you hear the chairman of the board, Francis Albert Sinatra, telling you about this town, that means we're in the third hour of the Wake Up Tucson show. It's already been a rocking and a rolling show. We had Bill Beard reporting after his experience with Ed reported over a dozen restaurateurs went to the Pima County Board of Soups yesterday and kind of, counseled them, laid into them and different things like that. It was so inspiring to see that many small businesses coming together and speaking their mind at the Board of Soups. That hasn't happened in a very, 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 very long time. We had one of my favorite Brits, Dominic Green, author, writes for Spectator USA. He was on. Steve Moore, of course, he's starting to make more regular appearances. And coming up at 8:30, we have Senator Martha McSally on the calling in. And lots of stuff going on with Senator McSally. Tomorrow, we have the Acting Commissioner of the Customs and Border Protection, Congressman David Schweikert. And we have Timothy Bowen running for Oral Valley Council tomorrow. So the hits keep on coming. This hour of Wake Up brought to you by Cabco AZ, Central Arizona Block. Now, we've been doing these restaurants for years we've been doing Food Fridays. And we're going to do, there's no one there? Is that what you're telling me right now?
I think he just left.
Okay. So, but it happens. It's not a problem. We have stuff to do. We're looking for Todd from Tucson Tamale Company. So let's get to, did I say anything? No. Anyway, so here's the best part. So we have, I saw this, well, maybe we are going to have Todd from the Tucson Tamale Company. Let's just do it, Ed. So anyway, we've expanded our Monday, Wednesday, Friday sections of food Fridays to do Food Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to help our brothers and sisters in the restaurant business make it through, strive, and survive, and then strive. So, Ed. All right, I'm going to go to news. We might get Todd from the Tucson Tamale on. Ed's having fun on the phone. So our good friend Raul Grijalva, with all the misery that's going on in the world, okay, with all the misery that's going on with the people in Tucson, Arizona, we're having the roundtable to discuss how to protect wildlife from diseases. This is what your congressman's doing right now. We're going to... let's see. He's going to protect animals from the spread of diseases like COVID-19. This is what Raul Grijalva is working on right now. His Sith apprentice, Rahina's doing tweets from the basement. We got Valadez and the crew over there ruining restaurants' lives, right? And this guy who says he's such an advocate for the working poor while they're getting decimated during all this stuff. He's doing a roundtable to keep the desert tortoise from getting COVID-19. I can't make this crap up. It's absolutely amazeballs, as we like to say. So, Ed Alexander, give me, what's our current situation?
I believe we should have Todd on the line.
Okay. Let's go right now. Part of our Food Wednesday brought to you by Visit Tucson. Let's go to Todd Martin from Tucson Tamale Company. Todd, good morning. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. You guys have been around for quite a while, but give us the kind of like the superhero origin story. Give us the origin story of Tucson Tamale.
what's really funny is that I was working at Intuit. And in January of 2008, we had decided to start this business. And so we made all of our plans. I left Intuit. We had just signed a lease, and then the bottom fell out of the market. So we started this right in the middle of the Great Recession. We opened up actually in November of 2008 over on Broadway. That location has since closed because of the widening on Broadway.
Right.
We purchased all the properties there. And we have two more. We open up two more restaurants in 2014, one on the north side, one on the east side. And then also in 2015, we opened up a USDA manufacturing facility. And so we are now sold actually in about 4,000 stores around the country. And we have a booming e-commerce business also, in addition to the two restaurants here in town.
And how is
that's the short version?
I think that's a pretty good short version. So I guess my question is, why tamales in 2008? You could have started a lot of different businesses, but why tamales?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we wanted to be in the food business. My wife Sherry is Hispanic. She grew up making tamales. It was a family tradition, and when we looked around, after the family stopped making tamales, their parents got too old, et cetera, we looked around, we couldn't find anything that really satisfied us from a, not just a flavor profile, but really from, good, clean food, we couldn't find anything organic. So we really set out to make a premium organic, better for you tamale. So we use like all organic corn. We don't use any lard. We use antibiotic-free meats and cheeses, hormone-free. And when we looked around in 2008, there was a lot of premium burritos. There were, a lot of premium items, but we couldn't find any really premium tamales. And we just saw an opportunity. And when we started off on Broadway, that was really more of a proof of concept. Would people buy these? And proof is in the pudding. This year, we're going to make 6 million tamales. So,
yikes!
There you go.
TucsonTamale.com, of course, to find out more. And really, so when you say you're selling 6 million tamales across the country, that is a hell of a Tucson. That's a Tucson business success story. I you don't have to say this, but I will. I think your story is underreported and underrated.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. We work hard. We bootstrapped this most of the way, and we're really proud of what we've done.
So they're doing free local delivery, right, and curbside pickup, correct?
Yep, at the two restaurants, absolutely.
Now, talk about the situation in the last 2 months and what you do, because you're in supermarkets, which of course have all been open and are essential businesses.
Yep.
And at the same time, the idea that you can ship stuff around the country or within the state, what has this done for business for you guys? What does that look like?
Yeah. So it's really, really been interesting. And every day as you wake up and you have to really understand the new landscape, literally on a daily basis. So part of our wholesale business was selling to restaurants, and so that part of the business evaporated. The grocery store business increased. The restaurants decreased. The e-commerce increased. So it's kind of like, I don't know if you remember the Seinfeld episode where when George was up, Elaine was down. When Elaine was up, George was down. So everything for Jerry balanced out. It kind of feels that way for us. So,
now, of course, that's Todd's referring to one of my favorite Seinfeld's ever, which is George. It's called George Does the Opposite, basically, right? And so what he says, Jerry, if every instinct in my mind is wrong, whatever instinct comes to mind, I gotta do the opposite and things will be looking up. And before it's over, he's working for the Yankees dating the hot blonde lady whose uncle works for the Yankees. So I know exactly what you're talking about, Todd. So how many varieties of tamales are you doing right now?
Right now we have 16 different ones.
And I know they're all like your children, but what's your current favorite?
Yeah. So, I only have one daughter, so I can tell you who my favorite daughter is. It's really hard to tell you who my favorite tamale is. but what's really funny is that I usually say the green chili pork and cheese, but I typically find myself eating the black bean and cheese much more often. So
gotcha.
I'm going to stick with the black bean and cheese is my favorite.
And I got two more questions for you. What did you learn about producing tamales? Why is Todd making tamales of 2020 smarter than the Todd of 2008, excuse me.
Oh, my gosh. So, here's an anecdote. So we'd been open about 3 months, and we had two people, Sherry, my wife, and another guy were rolling tamales, and they worked almost 9 hours, and they made, we thought they made 500 tamales, and we counted, they actually only made 498, and we thought that that was as good as we could possibly do. And when we looked, you know, we knew we needed to do better. And as we started building and thinking about it, one of my background at Intuit was with Six Sigma. And so, you know, process thinking and systems thinking. And so how do we keep the hand-rolled, the hand-rolled authenticity of the tamale and yet, you know, make it a manufacturing process? And, you know, we've learned a lot. We've been able to do it. We now, with a crew of six people, they can roll 18,000 tamales in a single day. So we went from 500 a day to 18,000 a day. You know, it really has to do with not compromising on your values when it comes to things like being hand-rolled, but also not letting some of the old ways get in your way, right? So,
sure.
So how can we incorporate new, you know, manufacturing techniques and still keep it? And so it was really about having just a mind shift and knowing that we had to be able to balance the two. And we, you know, it took a while. It was not overnight, but we kept, it was every day you improve one little thing until you get there. And we're still improving, right? It's a never-ending story.
Now, of course, you're talking about six people rolling 18,000 tamales brings me back to Seinfeld about rolling the crepes, but that's a whole other, that's going to take me off on a whole other tangent. Last question is favorite two locally owned restaurants that are not your own place. Where do you like to go currently?
So first of all, I have to say, you know, there's many more. I mean, we have so many. We love going out to eat, right?
I'll give you three.
Okay. So one of our favorites, we love Indian food, and so we go to Gandhi. And, you know, they had a buffet, and they're obviously shifting also. But so we did takeout from Gandhi last night, and it was just, you know, the flavors. I was lucky enough years ago to spend a few weeks in India, and they really have.
They're over on flavors. They're on Fort Lowell, right?
Yep. Yep.
And what's number two?
Noodleholics. So over on Country Club and Grant. And what I really love there is they have, when you get it hot, they say it's not, it basically makes your mouth and your tongue numb. And it's incredible. And then we love Oban downtown. And we haven't been there in a while, but we're itching to go back.
Very nice. Well, those are great. Those are all great choices. So check out TucsonTamale.com. He's doing curbside pickup at their two locations, of course, delivery. And, of course, you can get them at Sprouts and different supermarkets across the country. So, Todd, yep, congratulations to you and Sherry on building up a company that's doing 6 million tamales a year. That's pretty impressive. So keep doing the good work, and we'll get through this soon.
Yep, we will.
All right, thanks for the tamales, too. I'm going to do a Facebook Live as I unleash the tamales on the me and Ed Alexander. So, Todd, thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon. All right, if you missed it, go to my Facebook page at Christopher D. Simone. I just did the unveiling and cracking open of the tamales from Tucson Tamale. They're pretty damn good at Alexander.
I know. My puppets were trying to get in there, but we had to go do other stuff. So please save some for a cheap and Pat, please.
So real quick, I only got about 2 minutes here. So because we went long with the Tucson Tamale, Todd, which was great. That's a great story. And Senator McSally coming up at the bottom after the bottom hour break. Here's the thing. All these things I love. Ramon Valadez keeps repeating the same boring crap, which is, oh, the representatives, the legislators that want the account of the attorney general to investigate us and blah, blah, blah. It's all political. It's all political games. What have you people been doing? Everything's political. This is this is the life you've chosen. Pima County does political stuff all the time. You screw people who don't play ball with you all the time. You give preference to people who are part of the crew and everyone else can go to hell. That's political. Do you get that yet? So when Ramon Valadez says, oh, these are political games.
Duh. What the hell? Five of you people run this place into the ground.
You know, when I hear him whine like that, I want to do that part from The Godfather, right? Right at the beginning, Johnny Fontaine, right? He was the Sinatra guy, kind of singer, right? He was talking about Godfather, my family, my wife, and Brando picks him up by his lapels of his tuxedo and goes, "You gotta stand up like a man," right? That's what comes to my mind when I hear Ramon Valadez whine and go, "Oh, it's so political." You sat next to Richard Elias. Everything for years, everything Richard did was political. That dude couldn't order a beer without it being political. So cut the crap. I don't want to hear that crap ever again.
Yeah, guys all go eat Rigos. It's all political. Y'all all do is talk politics.
Oh, it's political.
Shut up.
Really? It's political? You hang out with Grijalva and Ekstrom? It's political. Get the hell out of here. I'm eating tamales. McSally coming up next.
Really good, too, yeah. You were in some kind of mood this morning. You had a Billy Idol, Billy Ocean.
Billy Joel.
Wow.
You know what happened was I was working off a Spotify playlist that I have that was alphabetized.
It must be alphabetized. That's what I'm thinking. Well, there they go.
I'm just helping that you notice such things. So that's a good job. I feel like I should be getting my roller skates on and roller skating the hell out of this one.
Great song. Like roll the windows down. Let's go ride.
Where are we going to go?
Anywhere
we're,
now.
We're definitely not going to California.
Can't go to the city parks. Did you see that? They're not going to open up the Tucson city parks until June. These people don't know how to run a park. Wait a month to figure that one out.
I had lunch at a Ramada in Oral Valley with the crew yesterday.
Good for you.
Thank you, Oral Valley. All right, let's go to the phones. On line 97 is Senator Martha McSally. She can't believe I have 97 phone lines.
Well, we're getting exactly. we're getting
don't
big.
Exaggerate, Chris.
Fake news, I tell them.
I'm calling from the cloakroom right off the Senate.
Look at you. I like that. I'm glad to see you guys working again. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my third trip back and forth in the last 3 weeks. Actually, if you count Air Force One, it was my fourth trip.
Oh,
that
look
was
at
cool.
You, look at you name dropping your Air Force One trips. Now, we had Steve Moore on. I told him I was going to tell you on last hour, and he wanted me to tell you that he loved the McSally Blackburn COVID-19 China bill. Can you? He wanted me to give you kudos. Can you explain to everyone the summary of that bill in a minute
absolutely.
Or less?
Absolutely. So China is responsible for unleashing this pandemic, their cover-up, their lies, their continued disinformation campaign. And so this bill allows a very narrow exception to the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act so that individuals who have been harmed by the coronavirus, either by losing a loved one or losing their job, could actually sue China. And there's precedent for this. We've had successful suits with similar exceptions for states. Sponsors of terrorists by Iran, where they've been able to get judgments in court and then actually get the resources. So it's a very narrow exception. We've already had a number of lawsuits out there, state of Missouri and some other class actions, I think up to about a dozen, but they would likely not succeed unless we have this narrow exception to this Sovereign Immunities Act that would allow China to be sued. It's one of the many tools we can use to hold them accountable.
Any other countries doing similar stuff?
I think some other countries are now waking up and realizing we need especially European countries to wake up and stop, being in bed with China, so to speak, and looking to see that China is on a path and has been for several decades to try and replace America as a world leader. And we need them to join with us in order to hold China accountable for this virus, but also their other malevolent activity. So I'm not sure if other countries have actually sued. I've seen maybe some in the news, but we're trying to focus this on what Americans, American states, and American citizens can do.
So last time I saw you in person, we were doing the Lincoln Day dinner together.
Yes.
And you got on the microphone and you said to everyone, look, we know we need to do certain things to flatten the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have flattened the curve. So what's happened since then? Not for you. I'm not saying this is a person. This is in, just in what's going on in this country.
Yeah.
What has happened since then that now it's not flattened the curve and the mission's changed? What in your opinion, why are we at where we're at now?
Well, we knew very little about this virus because of China's lies and cover-up, so we had to learn ourselves. We didn't have a good understanding of how it spread and how quickly it spread and what the death rate, how it impacted young and old people. And so we were asked to do our part. The president asked, you know, to do our part to flatten the curve so that we protect the vulnerable, don't overwhelm the healthcare system, support our frontline healthcare heroes, and we've done that. Now it's time. It's not an either or. I think this is now being politicized, and we're seeing it with these draconian measures in some of these states where they're now, they have been overreaching in their power. Look, I trust Arizonans and I trust Americans with the information we have and the guidance that's out there. It's not an either or. You either safely return to work or you're saving lives. We can do both. We need to protect the vulnerable, the elderly, those in congregate settings who are sick. We need to ensure when we focus our testing, it's on nursing homes and assisted living and independent living and hospitals to protect the vulnerable, but allow people to work. There's people up and down my street who were living paycheck to paycheck who all of a sudden had no paycheck. We provided some relief. They need to safely be able to return to work. I've already got my hair cut and got a pedicure 2 weekends ago, went out to restaurants last weekend in Tucson. I can safely do that. My friend who's a leukemia survivor, she has to make different choices. But this is what America and Arizona is all about.
Now, tell me about the CARES Act. Now that we're, you know, several weeks after the CARES Act, and there's the we've talked about on the show the perverse incentives of the extra $600 a week kicker, the cash bonuses for hospitals to say COVID-19 and put them on ventilators. But where are we at hindsight, Martha, on this CARES Act, on what was good and the PPP thing? What's give me a little hindsight breakdown on this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, at the time, it was all hands on deck to be able to quickly get relief out there in order to save people's jobs and save small businesses. And anytime you have speed and federal government in the same sentence, it's usually, you know, usually not associated with it. And so speed was the most important thing to get that support out there, to get immediate relief out to people. And the PPP is a perfect example. We could have had everybody line up single file with a government agency, and we'd be sitting here for years processing this. Or we could use the infrastructure that was out there with credit unions and banks and financial institutions to start processing these. Now, when you choose speed, there's going to be imperfection. It's not going to be perfect. We've seen that. But we're also asking people, as we're dealing with this unprecedented challenge, to operate in good faith and operate with selflessness. And just like you don't need to fight over toilet paper at Costco if you don't need any more, you shouldn't be getting PPP if it's not what you need if you have access to other capital. I've been really fighting for these mom-and-pop shops, these self-employed independent contractors, one- and two-person small family businesses. In the second tranche of PPP, many of them got access. I think the average loan at this point is like $85,000. The unemployment piece, look, we were concerned about that. We wanted to plus it up. It was an imperfect way to do it. Technically speaking, each state was unable to adapt to having an amendment, which I voted for, that said you can get unemployment up until what you were making, but not more than that. But the technical challenges of executing that would have slowed it down. But the underlying law still applies. And I talk to small businesses all the time. If you can't quit your job and get on unemployment, that's not allowed. If you've been offered your job back, you can't say, no, I'd rather be on unemployment. That needs to be reported to DES, and they will not qualify for unemployment if that happens. Going forward, we're working with the Trump administration. What else can we do to incentivize work and incentivize these small businesses being able to exist as we ramp back up again and get back to the economy, the best economy we had before this happened? We've got to get back there.
So basically when it comes to, because I know Secretary Mnuchin said that he was, that the people who say they don't want to come back to work are going to get kicked off the federal unemployment. So that really has to, if the employer, has to report it. If the employer doesn't report it, then we're going to have chaos in the system.
Yeah, the employer has to report it. You're not allowed to quit your job and get unemployment. You're not allowed to refuse a job and stay on unemployment. So that has to be reported. That's all managed at the state level. But that's underlying labor law, and we need employers. I talked to someone last week who had somebody say, I don't want to come back to work. And they said, well, okay, I'm going to report you. So, look, we've got to move forward to get people back to work. I think most Arizonans do want to work. There's a lot of challenges in the retail service sector, restaurants. We've got to provide more opportunities for people to be able to get back to work quickly and incentivize that work as well and ensure these small businesses survive so that those jobs exist.
So we have this, our Speaker of the House is, you know, they had this another $3 trillion worth of stuff. I assume once it gets over to your place, that would be killed anyway.
So did you see it says the word cannabis 68 times? It says that more than it says the word jobs. Look,
I know.
We're having serious conversations with the administration about what more can be done with deregulation, with tax incentives to bring jobs home from China, to bring manufacturing home, you know, to be able to get the economy going in afterburner again to meet some of the challenges that we have here. While we also invest in treatments and cures and vaccines, which, by the way, has been unprecedented, the level of innovation and investment that's happened, you know, record time in some of these things. So we've got to do all of this, and you know, we're in serious discussions about what that's going to take to support, you know, communities and small businesses around Arizona and workers around Arizona. So let's just say the serious discussions are happening in other places.
So here's a, this is not a something I'm saying you would do from the senatorial point of view, but we're looking at there's parts of America that the populace is screaming to get out and get back to work and do it in a safe mm-hmm. manner. Just putting on your public policy hat, not your senator hat. How does that get done better? You know what I mean? I mean, I know certain states have got, now governors are getting sued over some of these draconian orders.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think that those in some of those states we've seen, some are auditioning to be picked for, you know, Biden's vice presidential pick. I think they've overreached. And again, people were willing, with the guidance from the president, were willing to sacrifice in order to flatten the curve. But the overreach that we see happening in some of these states and the way they're going about it, I think that appropriately, people are pushing back, and the courts are working through their process there. Look, people can come to Arizona, go out to dinner, go get your nails done, go get your hair done. I trust Arizonans to do this our way, where people can safely work, safely shop, learn best practices as we learn more about this virus. Yeah, they should vote with their feet, maybe.
And let's switch over to campaign, because this early ballots are going out in, I don't know, 51 days or something like that for a primary. Mark Kelly, real quick, he has a little bit of a China situation himself, just came out in Real Clear Politics. What's going on with that young man?
Yeah, he does a China problem. Look, I'm standing up to China. I want to hold China accountable. I've never trusted a communist in my life. And now China is actually threatening me personally and to meddle in our election. Meanwhile, Mark Kelly has not just, like, the Democrats have weakness in China in general, but he has got specific problems where they've got Chinese companies that are affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party that are invested into businesses that he's co-founder of, Worldview. You guys are familiar with that in Tucson. This same company is responsible for censoring individuals you know, trying to speak out during the coronavirus. He also, if you haven't seen the video, as he was peddling pyramid scheme vitamins over in China, came out on stage on a motorcycle with a Chinese flag on the back.
Hold on. Mark Kelly?
Did you not see that yet?
No.
Yes.
On a motorcycle doing vitamins?
Peddling, yes. Look, he has shown that, you know, he is just willing to, you know, for his second career, you know, make a buck no matter what it looks like, no matter who he's associated with. And I think that's going to be a major factor in this campaign. Who's going to stand up to China will be a factor for President Trump against Biden, but it's going to be a significant factor in our race as to who you want to be your senator and who's going to be in the Senate majority.
I have a lot of listeners that have emailed me today, and I got to ask the question, are you willing to do a primary debate?
We're focused on beating Mark Kelly. That's the importance of this election, and it's all hands on deck to make sure that Chuck Schumer's not in charge.
So my question is, and you didn't do a primary debate 2 years ago, and now you don't want to do one now. Why? Well, what's the problem with that? I understand about Mark Kelly, but what's the problem with doing a primary
debate.
We're
focused on the general election. We've got President Trump's full endorsement. We're all hands on deck in order to beat Mark Kelly.
All right, Martha. Well, thanks for the time as always, and we'll catch you soon.
You guys take care.
U.S. Senator Martha McSally. The question was asked, people. So 8:49 in the morning, you are on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. I will discuss that answer when we come back on the in the fourth segment. Wake up. It's magic. It just is.
Relax. Hey, tomorrow the commish from the Customs Border Protection. CBP man will be with us tomorrow morning.
We're bringing it hot and heavy tomorrow.
Good
stuff. Thought today was hot and heavy?
It was.
Super hot and heavy tomorrow. So I want to explain this whole thing of my discretion, my question. Wow, I'm going to sound like Elmer Fudd there. Talking about with my question to Senator McSally about debating Daniel McCarthy, right? Oh. And so Dan Shearer, I love Dan Shearer.
You mean Mark Kelly? Or
no.
McCarthy. Okay.
Daniel in a primary.
Okay.
The primary. All right. And Dan says, and I love Dan, her primary opponent's not a serious candidate. I don't blame her, right? And then, so here's the thing. This is why I asked her the question and why I still think Martha should debate McCarthy, okay? And I know a lot of you, he's a joke and whatever. He got on the ballot, okay? He has a following. I don't know how big the following is, but I will tell you there are more people with Daniel McCarthy signs in their front yard in Pima County than Martha McSally signs. Even when I was in Phoenix on Saturday in Fountain Hills, I saw a few Daniel McCarthy. I never see anyone put a Martha McSally sign in their front yard. Now, I'm sure there's some out there that do that, but I don't see it. Ed lives in the Acres. There's no Republican Senate boys in there anyway, so he wouldn't see it anyway. But what I'm telling you is, she did this against Kelly Ward and Marpaio. Okay? She did this with Kelly and Arpaio. Well, she did this with Kelly Ward and Arpaio. Okay? Here's the thing. Okay? She pissed off the base. She pissed off the people that voted for Kelly and Joe. That's why they undervoted for her against Kyrsten Sinema and the same folks who are Daniel McCarthy. She can't afford to lose any Republican votes. Do you guys get this? And if she's such a badass as a senator, she can handle a primary with Daniel McCarthy. I'm not doing this for Daniel McCarthy's sake. I'm actually doing it for her sake. I know that sounds like I'm doing this for your own sake. Because if this is a way to build it back with the base. Because what happened was, and this is what Leah Marquez Peterson did. I'll say it again. They both had the same handlers. They both said, I'm not, these people are not worthy for me to debate. And their people did not vote. They left that blank for Martha and Leah. So my thing is, they're going to spend $10 to $20 million on this race or more. This race is huge. I got this guy, Aaron, saying, I let her off the hook. I don't know how I let her. I asked her the question.
You asked her two or three times.
What besides you yell at her and tell her, you need to do that? I'm not going to do that. But I'm giving you my take right now, okay, is that if she wants to win this race, she should debate McCarthy. Because what is she going to do? She only has one debate. Look at her one debate again. Oh, she have one or two debates against Sinema where she wasn't that good? Martha has not debated under fire that well and that often. Let's get to our good friend Kath McCauley from Pocket Sketching before I run out of time.
Yeah,
Kath, I know we're going to be painting and drinking tomorrow at 4 o'clock tomorrow, but what do you got for me today, young lady?
That is a totally different story. A little background. I'm an absolute introvert. I've had to learn extreme extrovert talents to be able to do what I do. Martha is incredibly good where she is, but she is not willing to debate Mark Kelly.
No, she's not willing to debate Daniel McCarthy. That's her.
She's not willing to debate anybody. I have a daughter-in-law who's a lieutenant colonel, an A-17 pilot, and she's now in the personal, being able to talk in public area. Hmm. She's good, but she had to go from being exactly like Martha, very, very good at what she did. And, you know, just, hey, this is the way it is. That's it. I'm not going to be public. to becoming a public figure. And Martha could well talk with Chandra. She needs help. If she wants the job, and we need her,
right.
She's good. It's not that she's a Republican and we're going to lose that seat. She's good. She needs to really be able to push her candidacy. And we're losing on her. My husband's telling me not to contribute because she won't do anything. She's got to do. If she contacts me, I'll put her in touch with Chandra, who has gone through going from just like Martha
And your husband has flown more missions possibly than Martha McSally.
Yeah, he probably did. Yep. 23 years active flying.
Yep.
Anyway.
We got to get going. Yeah, we're running out of time. Kath, thanks for the great call.
Tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow at 4
okay.
o'clock for our virtual happy hour. Great call, though.
For our silly happy hour. Okay.
Awesome. Bye. Take care, Kath. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Zach's coming up next. We have the Commissioner of the Customs and Border Protection on for the Thursday show. Billy Buckmaster at noon.